What's up, biohackers? I've got to tell you about this delicious drink that I am sipping on. You know we try to eat clean, prioritize pure ingredients, especially when it comes to our protein powder. If we're not intentional with our sourcing, we could be exposed to so many harmful chemicals and toxins that are hidden in what appear to be healthy and nutrient-rich ingredients. This is why I got to tell you about PW1 whey protein powder from Puri. Puri is third-party tested against more than 200 contaminants. It's also free from hormones, GMOs, and pesticides. Bonus, it is soy-free and gluten-free. It has 21 grams of protein per serving, which makes it a really easy way to increase your daily intake, especially for our ladies out there. And what we all want to know when it comes to our nutrition, is it delicious? Yes, it really, truly is. I am drinking it every single morning these days. I've been pretty much drooling over the bourbon vanilla flavored protein powder in my morning nutrition stack. It's great in my coffee, my home-crafted smoothie, and actually works really well just in my shaker bottle with water. These ingredients are so simple. There's no added artificial sweeteners, so none of the bitter, cringy tastes that come along with a lot of healthy powders. It's just pure and so yummy. Puri is pure origin, potency, and peace of mind. They believe in full transparency with all of their products, including their PW1 whey protein powder. And each batch is certified by the Clean Label Project. Okay, but what does that mean? It is tested for heavy metals, bisphenols, residual solvents, and all of the other yucky stuff we do not want in our bodies. Lastly, every Puri product comes with a QR code with those specific batch test results, so you know exactly what you're getting. Of course, we always want to educate and empower you to be your own best health advocate, so don't just take our word for it. With Puri, you can find the real transparent data behind every single batch, which makes Puri a supplement brand that we can easily trust. All right, so here's the details. Right now, Puri is offering our listeners 20% off their PW1 whey protein and all of their other incredible products. Go now to our exclusive URL, puri.com/biohackerbabes, and use our promo code biohackerbabes. This will even apply to your already discounted subscriptions, and you'll get almost a third off of the price. They are being so, so generous with our audience. Go to puri.com/biohackerbabes. Do not wait. We have our promo code biohackerbabes at puri.com/biohackerbabes. This is nutrition made oh so simple. All right, biohackers, let's get back to the show.
Brain is a female, is constantly scanning our environment. Are we safe enough and healthy enough to have a baby?
My name is Renee.
And I'm Lauren.
We are the Biohacker Babes. We're sisters and we're joining forces to empower you to become your own biohacker and upgrade your life.
The Biohacker Babes podcast aims to provide insight into the body's natural healing abilities, strengthen your intuition, and empower you with techniques and modalities to optimize your health and wellness. Because life is too short to not feel your best every single day.
This podcast offers health, fitness, and nutritional information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitute for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional. Thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Welcome to episode 98 of the Biohacker Babes. I'm Lauren, recording from New York City, and I'm joined by my sister, Renee.
Hello from Las Vegas.
Hey, Vegas. And we are bringing on Dr. Carrie Jones today. We are so, so excited to have her. She is the medical director of the Dutch test, which is our preferred hormone test that we use a lot in our practice. She is awesome. She's so smart. She is funny. If you're not following her on Instagram already, don't pause this episode, but go to Instagram and start following her right now. She is just really helpful in explaining women's hormones. She does really funny Instagram reels and she makes things just super, super relatable and easy to understand. So we are so grateful for her. And we really think she is a true expert in this realm.
She really is. I mean, she's my go-to for anything hormone related. If I ever have a question, I'll either go to like the Dutch website and look at videos, or I'll go to her Instagram and see if I can find the answer. And like you said, she just makes everything so easy to understand. And yes, hormones are very complicated, but she really breaks it down and makes it easier for all of us to understand, which I really appreciate. And we had so many questions for her today. We got through maybe half of them.
I know.
She just has so much great information. So we'll probably have to have her back on one day to answer the rest of our questions.
But absolutely. But if you have questions about cortisol and estrogen, that's really where we spend most of our time today, especially with estrogens, with all of the environmental toxins and xenoestrogens, and also how to get rid of estrogens if you are stopped up. So lots of fun stuff. And before we bring her on, I'm going to read you her bio. Dr. Carrie Jones is an internationally recognized speaker, consultant, and educator on the topic of women's health and hormones. Dr. Jones graduated from the National University of Natural Medicine in Portland, Oregon, where she also completed a two-year residency in women's health, hormones, and endocrinology. Later, she graduated from Grand Canyon University's Master of Public Health program. Recently, Dr. Jones became board certified through the American Board of Naturopathic Endocrinology. She was adjunct faculty for many years, teaching gynecology and advanced endocrinology fertility. While in practice, Dr. Jones served as medical director for two large integrative clinics in Portland. She is currently the medical director for Precision Analytical. Side note, Precision Analytical is the Dutch test. So if you're not familiar with this test, you'll know a little bit more about it after this episode, and then you can check out the website or contact us if you want to learn a little bit more.
Great. Let's go ahead and bring her on.
Welcome, Dr. Carrie. We're so happy to have you here with us today.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for having me on.
We have been really looking forward to this. We have to tell you, you are our everyday woman crush. And we think it's awesome. You're just so much fun, and you're just so knowledgeable about hormones and women's health. And as the medical director of Dutch, you have an amazing understanding of all the steroid pathways, all the hormone conversions, and you really present it in such an easy, relatable way. Like, what could be so freaking difficult? You have like these amazing Instagram reels that are just so funny. And I think for a lot of people, we put hormones in this separate category where it's just like our moods when we're going through our cycle, or it has to do with fertility, but not overall health. So maybe to kick this off, can you explain why hormones really are so important?
Oh my gosh, because they drive everything, right? I mean, how many times have you said yourself, I feel hormonal, or it's my hormones, or your friend is like, oh my gosh, I'm feeling really hormonal today. And hormonal has just become this umbrella term because we don't get taught a lot about what it means as a woman. We get taught when we're in maybe middle school or even high school, like, okay, here's how not to have a baby, or, you know, or how to have a baby when you get there. And then that's it. Like, that's kind of the basics. And it's like, you know, you get your period and good luck, like more power to you. And nobody really teaches us what's normal, you know, what could commonly go wrong, what happens when it's not about fertility, but it's about everything else. What happens as you get older and it's perimenopause. It's amazing the number of women who are like, I never knew that. I never got taught that. Like, really? Gosh, I didn't realize that. I mean, just some of that basic anatomy, physiology. And that's really what sort of drove my passion into hormones, because I ended up just educating all the time in my practice to women who had really great questions. They were too afraid to ask anyone and they weren't sure if Google was right. And so they were like, the number of times I even explained to women, like how to have sex, you know, like how to, like what it just like where urine comes from, like which hole, you know, just these basic things that I thought, oh my gosh, hormones really are involved in all of this. Like how we feel, our mood, our skin, our hair, our heart, our blood sugar, right? Our sleep. And so that's why hormones just make the world go round. Or for some women, they don't. They come to a screeching halt. So it's important to understand them.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you've been really passionate about hormones for a long time. Was there something that like instigated that for you or started it?
So I've known since I was a little girl that I wanted to be a doctor, and I thought I wanted to be an OBGYN or like pediatrician. I kind of thought I wanted to be more family health or maternal type health. And then when I got into naturopathic medicine, I met my mentor who primarily only focused in women's health, not the OB part. She did all the gynecology. And I thought, oh, this is what I want to do. This is, Exactly. I feel like, you know, God bless our pediatricians, you know, and those who focus in OB, but I wanted really specific just to focus on women. I wanted to learn one thing and hopefully learn it well, as opposed to also having to learn babies and also having to learn pediatrics. And so that I just kept finding out as a woman, and a lot of my friends, or in class, you know, you're sitting in class and you're going through it and you're like, oh, I'm a woman. And I didn't know that. Like, oh, I am this many years old before I learned that. Huh? That's not good.
You know? Yeah.
And I wanted, yeah. And yeah. I found that as I got into practice, I had the same experience. I had all these women who were like, I didn't know that. I didn't know that's how that worked. Or again, back to the general, I feel hormonal. I don't know what that means. I just know I feel bad. And so that's why I focused on it.
Awesome. Have you ever thought about putting together a program for preteens, like for younger girls?
You know, it's funny. I had a lot of preteens in my practice. In my practice, I didn't do pediatrics. So I would say to the moms, I'm like, you have to have at least started your period before you can come see me. Like, otherwise you're truly kind of considered pediatric, even though technically 18 is the cutoff. Because once they started getting their period, they had so many questions they just didn't want to ask their mom. Although I find girls now are, because of social media and because of the internet, they are more savvy. And so, you know, my kids were and are, like, they're totally open to asking questions. They ask, my 20-year-old asked me questions all the time. And I'm like, this is great. But, you know, also with a household, that's what I do. And I encouraged it. So it is definitely something I think is needed. And I'm sure it's out there by other wonderful practitioners I'm sure there are preteen courses. I have not created one yet. I almost feel like I need, instead of a preteen course, I almost feel like I need just a, like, welcome to the female body course just for women. Like, I think a lot of women would just take it to be like, I didn't know that. And I'd like to know more.
Yeah.
Like, the number of women who have, as an example, got divorced. And so maybe they've been married for a while, or it was their first person ever, or you know, they don't have a lot of experience just in maybe sexual health. They would get divorced and they would come to me and they would go, you know, it's been a long while and I don't know really how things work. Like, I figured it out, you know, way back when I got married, but now that I'm older and I'm single and I'm getting back in the dating stage, like, can you really tell me more about my period? Can you tell me more about these symptoms? Can you tell me more about fertility, pregnancy avoidance? And I was like, oh yeah, I feel like we kind of need a, like an after high school, like once manual. You've been through puberty. Yeah. Like the next stage manual for women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More, I mean, that seventh grade course needs to be knocked out because everything was just so taboo then. Like, the teachers didn't even want to be teaching it. And then going into college, we should definitely have stages of manuals, because Renee and I are in our 30s and we still every year we're like, wow, just learn that.
In my 40s. I'll be 44 in 2 weeks. And I had so many women that were like, what are these? Why am I hot? I'm like, oh, those are called hot flashes. They're like, why am I having them? I'm like, ooh, because you're perimenopausal. They're like, what's that?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, right. We need a course for that too.
Take a step back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like puberty and menopause. There's nothing in between. Don't worry about it.
Nothing in between. I know. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, a big problem with hormones for women is that, you know, they're going to their doctor, maybe if they're not feeling well, they're doing a blood test and then their hormones come back, you know, normal.
Right.
And then they just get really frustrated. And that's one of the reasons why Lauren and I love the Dutch test so much, because it does give us this big complete picture. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can share with everyone, why are, you know, looking at urine tests better than blood tests for hormones?
I say it's because it gives you layers. So when you get your blood test, which is great, you get this nice superficial overview of what's happening in your blood in that moment, but it doesn't tell you how you are processing your hormones. And I think that's what a lot of women and men, honestly, want to know. Like, they want to know what their hormones are and then where they're going and what they're doing. Because you could have completely normal levels of testosterone, let's say, in your bloodstream. But yet when we do a urine test and we get to see, because when your hormones go through these pathways, they then get released out into the urine. So we pick it up on urine, but we don't pick it up in blood. So you could have totally normal levels of testosterone. But when we look at a urine test, we're like, oh, but then you go down the pathway that causes chin hair and cystic acne and female pattern baldness and anger and irritation. And then women are like, oh, that's why I'm having all those symptoms. I went to my doctor. I reported those symptoms. They drew my testosterone, told me it was fine and it's not fine. I'm like, no, it's actually going down it's the pathway it's chosen, or your body is chosen, and we can do something about that. Same for estrogen.
Right.
Women are, you know, everyone freaks out, of course, about estrogen and estrogen-related symptoms, PMS, breast tenderness, heavy periods, clots, endometriosis, fibroids, breast cancer. And so you go, you get your blood checked, and they're like, oh yeah, your estrogen's right in range for where it should be. You're like, well, why am I a PMS mess? Like, why are my periods so heavy? And, you know, like, why do I need to be concerned about breast cancer, estrogen-related breast cancer? And the nicest thing, again, about the urine test is we get these pathways. You make estrogen, and then how does your body handle it? And some of the pathways are less concerning, and some of the pathways are more concerning. Some of the pathways cause growth. So those women with fibroids, full tender breasts that hurt, heavy periods, obviously there's lots of reasons for that. But if we find it's this particular pathway, let's do something about it. Let's get you off or reduce or mitigate that pathway. And that's why I like the test so much. And it's collected home. You don't have to have a blood draw. So lots of people who don't like needles or are concerned to go to a lab or a hospital, you know, right now at this time, they like that they can have an at-home collection test.
Yeah, especially in this last year. And I have to say, I love the salivette so much more than spitting in a tube. I'm like, thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
So much easier.
The cortisol aspect. So if anyone's ever done a saliva test before, which is literally historically you spit in a test tube. And if you've ever had to do it, you have to generate a lot of saliva and you have to do it rather quickly to get it into the tube. And the bubbles don't count. So if you've ever spit in a tube, right, it's all these like bubbles and to like knock them down. It's a pain. So we don't test hormone. We don't test estrogen or progesterone or testosterone off of our saliva. We only check cortisol. So we are able to do what are called salivette swabs. They're basically cotton swabs that you pop in your mouth, get wet, and stick back in the tube. So it's no spitting. It's great for people who have dry mouth, especially in the morning. And, you know, don't like spitting, think it's gross, kind of smells, you know, like all the things. So it's really nice to have that option.
So great. So when I first started studying FDN 10 years ago, we were using the BioHealth 205, which I thought was so cool.
It was. Yeah, it was revolutionary back then. Yeah.
But when I found the Dutch, I was like, oh man, that was like a 50-piece puzzle versus a 5,000-piece puzzle. This is amazing. Mm-hmm. So the Dutch is just so intricate. There's so many layers to it, like you said. I'm just curious, do you have a favorite marker or a favorite part of the test?
A favorite part of it. Well, I have a favorite hormone. My favorite hormone is DHEA, DHEAS. But I don't know that it's my like favorite marker. I would say my favorite part, I have two favorite parts of the test. One would be the estrogen sort of metabolism or estrogen detoxification. Being a woman, breast cancer is in my family, and just talking to lots and lots of women all the time, I really like knowing this, speaking of the puzzle analogy, this piece of that puzzle for women. And I know that it's well-researched how we can shift it, change it, you know, through diet, lifestyle, supplements, what have you, which is so wonderful that women aren't necessarily tasked for life with having like, oh gosh, you're on the pathway that causes growth. Like, good luck. Sorry. Instead, it's like, oh, you're on the pathway that causes growth. Let's try to reduce that through these researched ways. And that's why I love. Now, the other part of the test I like is the cortisol part, because we check multiple aspects of cortisol. We check how much is free and available. We answer the question, do you even make it in the first place? Do you have that ability? We check if you deactivate. I'm a deactivator. Well, I was in March. I did my own test.
Me too.
Of course. Right. And so
I think we're all the same there.
Right. And burnout, hashtag burnout is real. And I have low free cortisol, which a lot of people would interpret as, oh my gosh, take all these stimulatory herbs and supplements and whatnot, take adaptogens, take licorice, take. And in my case, like you guys, I make cortisol, I just deactivate it. And so getting to my root cause had nothing to do with production. Don't stimulate. My gland is fine. What I was doing was deactivating. And so when you deactivate cortisol, it makes you tired because your body's like, hey, you're burning the candle at both ends. Let's slow your roll and deactivate it so that you can't bind to receptors and do the things. And so I got a lot of questions. I posted my results on social media. Why didn't you take adaptogens? Why didn't you take glandulars? Why didn't you take licorice? you know, why didn't you just like throw everything about the adrenals at your adrenals? I'm like, cause it's not a, my gland is fine. I was the problem. I was the problem.
So much more complex.
I was burning the candle at both ends and I needed to slow down and take care of myself and make other adjustments. And so that's why I like the Dutch, is that I could look at that and see that and go, oh, it's me.
Yeah.
I'm the problem.
So a lot of the saliva tests for cortisol, they'll just do like morning, midday, evening, but Dutch has the cortisol awakening response. I love that like second collection. Can you explain why that's so important to do two in the morning?
The cortisol awakening response is exactly what you think it sounds like. It happens on awakening and it happens within the first 30 to 45 minutes of waking. And it's when your cortisol goes kind of low, to way up there very quickly. And it's when your eyes open up and you register that you're awake, you're conscious, and light comes into your eyes, then poof, cortisol goes up. It's a natural response. It's to get your butt out of bed. It's to protect you. It's to lower inflammation. It's to give you a little bit of blood sugar because you've been fasting all night long. And so what we need to know though, is what is your cortisol on waking? Because that's baseline. So when you wake up, open your eyes, immediately you pop the saliva swab in your mouth. And then 30 minutes later, you do it again, because I want to see, do you even have the ability to make cortisol? Does it go up normally? And then 30 minutes later, we do it again. So I want to know what happens on waking, what happens 30 minutes later, and what happens 30 minutes later. Because I want to know, it's a very quick, within an hour, natural phenomenon that happens. But if you don't do it, like let's say yours is low or flatlined, then people tend to say, I'm really tired in the morning. I feel inflamed in the morning. I hit snooze multiple times. I need a lot of coffee. And so my cheater question's always the same. I'll say, how long does it take you to feel alert in the morning? Research says it should take you between 30 and 45 minutes. And if it takes you 2 hours and cups of coffee, you probably have an unhealthy cortisol awakening response that's struggling. On the flip side, if you say, oh my goodness, I wake up and I go from 0 to 100 and I'm anxious and I'm panic and I'm hypervigilant and I'm like checking my phone and my to-do list and I'm on fire, I'm like, ooh, ha, you probably have a really high cortisol awakening response. Right. Let's address this.
Yeah. I'll never forget. I heard you say this a year ago, Lauren, we've talked about this, how you said, if you ever wake up in the morning and you're like, oh, I feel like I'm maybe getting sick or something. Mm-hmm. And then an hour later, you're like, oh no, I'm fine. And that the role of cortisol in that.
Yes. Cortisol is anti-inflammatory to a point. And so that's one of the aspects of that cortisol going up. Now people freak out. People are like, oh, I didn't think I wanted my cortisol high. I thought a high cortisol is bad. I'm like, well, there's truly high. And then there's a normal physiologic rise in cortisol in the morning. So what we're talking about is it does go up, but it goes up in a healthy expected manner. That's what's considered normal. So I'm like, yeah, it goes up in the morning, but it's supposed to within these ranges. So because it's anti-inflammatory and it can be in a sense suppressive to the immune system. So just like you, so when it's low, when you wake up and you're like, oh, it got me, I'm sick, my throat, you know, I feel kind of achy and feverish. And then you get up, you take a shower, you get moving. Now your cortisol has gone up. In theory, it should. And you think, oh, I feel so much better. I wonder what happened. I wasn't sick. I wonder why I was sick. I wonder why I felt sick. Cortisol plays a role in that. And then what can happen is you go through your day. Cortisol naturally goes down through the day. Cortisol is like the sun. Melatonin is like the moon. And so people will start to say, man, as it gets dark out, as it's getting night again, I feel inflamed again. I feel kind of achy again. I feel like it's got me again. Like your cortisol is dropping down. There probably is something going on behind, mildly affecting your immune system, but cortisol is enough in the morning to like overcome it. And then you push through your day. And then at night, cortisol is like, I did my job. I'm going to bed. Good luck. And you feel terrible.
Yeah. That's why my bug bites always itch so much when I'm sleeping.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, that's terrible. So for someone with a low CAR, other than getting sunlight within 30 minutes of waking, do you have any other diet and lifestyle recommendations?
Whatever they do it in that first 30 minutes. And so sometimes people are put on supplements. Maybe they're taking adaptogens. They're taking herbs specific for the adrenals. They're taking B vitamins. They're doing like they're doing some yoga or some stretching or whatever it is to get going. And so I'll say, do it in the first 30 minutes. Because what happens is you tell people like, okay, here's your morning regimen of things you should take. And what do people do? They get up, they eat breakfast, or they work out, they shower, you know, they get started at work. And then they're like, oh crap, my morning supplements, you know, and like an hour or two, or sometimes at lunch, then they take their supplements. Great. In general, but if you're specifically trying to target the car, then work with the timing. So you have to do it within 30 minutes. The caveat is the people who are on thyroid medication. Thyroid medication, she's a diva. She likes to be the only thing in your stomach by a good solid hour at least. So if you are listening to this and you're like, oh, but I take thyroid medication in the morning and then I wait and take my supplements because thyroid's a diva, that's what you have to do. Like I don't have a biohack for that. Some people take thyroid at night. Some people set their alarm at 4 or 5 in the morning, take their thyroid and go back to bed. But a lot of women just wake up and take their thyroid. And so in that case, I'm like, just use sunlight to your advantage in the first 30 minutes, get some movement, do some stretching, you know, and take your supplements when you can, when you're allowed after your thyroid. So that is the one caveat.
Yeah. That's a great tip.
Helpful. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to come back to our hormones. So just like cortisol and inflammation, estrogen is sort of demonized, has kind of a bad reputation. Can we talk about xenoestrogens and how that maybe shows up on a test and what that's doing to, well, I guess our entire health profile?
Yeah. It's xenoestrogens, man, they're a pain in the butt because they look enough like estrogen that they can fit into the estrogen receptor and turn it on, but they aren't bioidentical to estrogen, so they don't show up on estrogen testing. So women can have normal estrogen in the blood, in the saliva, in the urine, but they feel very estrogenic. Again, it's like the heavy periods, it's the PMS, it's the moodiness, it's the breast tenderness, it's fibroids, worse endometriosis, what have you. And they're like, well, my testing was normal, but I have all the symptoms. I'm like, well, it's very possible you have these chemicals in your body that mimic or look like estrogen, and they're binding to the receptor and turning it on. Therefore, you get all the symptoms. They're turning on the PMS, you know, cascade. They're turning on the breast tenderness cascade. It's not from your actual estrogen. It's from these chemicals, parabens, phthalates, plastics. So let's do what we can to minimize this stuff in your life, switching to glass, minimizing or avoiding fragrance, even the like decorative candles, they still off gas, things like that, right? All the scented things, saran wrap, plastic wrap, you know, as you just go through the things you use in your daily life, you start to realize like, oh my gosh, I'm kind of surrounded by chemicals, detergent, skincare, deodorant, shampoo. And so doing what you can within your budget to starting to switch out of these products into maybe cleaner, less estrogen stimulating type, estrogen receptor type stimulating alternatives.
Yeah. Even the water we drink has plastics in it. And everyone's trying to pull back from drinking water out of plastics, but you don't realize that the plastic's already there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
In such a toxic world.
The air we breathe.
Coming from every direction.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. It's super unfortunate. Yeah. And then it affects everything downstream because it's hard to see in testing, you know, but yet women and men are reporting all these symptoms. I'm like, ugh. And a lot of them are fat soluble. They're fat soluble chemicals. So they live in our fat cells. And so then they're harder to get rid of. So if you're trying to, let's say you're actively trying to lose weight, you're actively trying to decrease your fat storage, as your fat cells release, you will then re-release these chemicals. And so I often hear from women and men too, who are doing weight loss programs, especially if it's kind of a more rapid weight loss program. They're like, oh my gosh, all my symptoms, what's going on? I'm super tired, or my skin's breaking out, or my PMS is terrible. I'm like, okay, you're actively dropping or, you know, breaking apart fat cells. And so as a result, you're releasing not only fatty acids, but the chemicals that were stored inside because they get attracted to fat. And so we have to make sure that your liver, your kidneys, your sweating ability, your breathing, we call these emunctories, the way you expel stuff out of you, urine, you know, like that, we have to make sure that's working well so we can help your body get rid of this.
Yeah. We were meant to excrete, and so many people don't.
So many people stuff it, right? Like they don't drink enough water and they like use deodorant that doesn't allow them to sweat. They don't like to sweat. They poop every couple of days. You know, I'm like, oh my goodness, I know. Don't you want to get it out?
Yeah, let it out, please.
That cannot feel good. Yeah, so someone could technically have like an estrogen dominance mm-hmm. even without seeing it on the test.
Yeah, and that's usually. It. That's what's sneaky because, and in some sense, why conventional medicine, when they go see their doctor and they're like, well, your estrogen's normal. In some sense, they could be totally right. Their estrogen is normal. Their ovaries are not overproducing yeah. estrogen. It's the fact that they live in a heavily fragranced, lots of plastic chemicals, you know, what they put in their garden, what they clean their house, like all this stuff has just been absorbed into the body and the body's having a tough time getting rid of it. And it's binding to receptors. And, yeah. and what's more and more is coming out in the literature about this, you know, way back 10, 15, 20 years ago, this concept was like very woo woo and like, oh, you crazy hippie just trying to get me not to use aluminum in my deodorant. Now, fast forward, oh my gosh, there's so much research on xenoestrogens, right? With an X, xenoestrogens, endocrine disrupting chemicals. If you type in endocrine disrupting chemicals, you'll find so much research on it. And like, oopsies, it's real. It's very real.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why we love the Skin Deep database on EWG yeah. just to be able to see what these chemicals are doing. I mean, it's
right.
Especially at the beginning of summer, everyone's crazy about, you have to wear SPF. I'm like,
right.
Oh, but not that one.
Right. But read that label. Hold on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't put chemicals on your skin and then go right. keep them up outside. Yeah.
Right. In UV. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so where does soy fit into that? Because again, I think soy got a bad rep because of the whole estrogen issue.
Right. So soy, I think, is a really tricky one because soy is heavily GMO'd. And it can be a heavily sprayed crop and sprayed with pesticides, fungicides, what have you. And it's because Americans tend to be like, oh, if a little bit's good, then a whole lot is better in various forms. So now we have soy ice cream and soy yogurt and soy bars and soy protein powder and soy replacement, soy burgers. Like everything suddenly became soy. Whoa. So what I tell people is I'm not opposed to soy, but I would stick to the classic, I would stick to like tempeh, right? Like fermented. I would stick to edamame. I would stick to miso and try to make sure it's our, you know, kind of organic, non-GMO type if you're going to go for soy. So I'm not opposed to soy, but I definitely in practice had vegans and vegetarians and they just lived on, they were so excited because, you know, they could get literally everything soy, everything somebody else could eat, they could eat in the form of soy, soy cottage cheese, you know, soy whipped cream, like soy everything. And I was like, I might be a little bit kind of chemically altered. That's a little too much. So I don't know that you realize what you're doing. So
yeah, I remember a couple of years ago
versions.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of years ago, I saw a woman checking out at Whole Foods in front of me. And I kind of feel bad saying this. She was probably like 250 pounds. She was pretty overweight. And her entire cart was what you just said, soy hot dog, soy yogurt, soy ice cream, soy milk. And I just, it's like, do I say something? No.
She won't. I mean, right. Like she's not going to listen. And I'm sure people have tried to tell her and she's like, I stick to my vegetarian diet or I was told this is healthier. And I know it can be super confusing. And soy gets really demonized, which I understand. But at the same time, some of the components in soy, the isoflavones in soy, like they can be really helpful for the menopausal woman because they bind estrogen receptors. And instead of being like in a menopausal state, we often have very low estrogen because our ovaries are done and we don't have a lot of estrogen anymore. So we are deficient. We're estrogen deficient in menopause. And so those isoflavones in soy and in other herbs and stuff can, and other foods, can bind into the estrogen receptor and give you a little bump. And so, and turn those receptors on. It doesn't raise your estrogen in your body, but it does activate your estrogen receptor. But teeny tiny amount. So if you went from 0 to, you know, 2%, like that could be enough to help hot flashes. And so there is compelling research to say, you know, those menopausal women, if they have miso, if they have edamame, if they throw in some tempeh, assuming you're not allergic or intolerant to it or something like that, you know, they, it could be beneficial to those symptoms. And so
but maybe eat some other foods with it.
Yes. And not make your whole diet, because you read somewhere soy helps hot flashes and all of a sudden everything in your pantry is soy based.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Cause we want that estrogen, especially as we age, right. For mm-hmm. bone health, for
I heart, think, brain, heart, brain, skin. Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately I get asked a lot. I get asked, you know, like what is the one herb or nutrient that's going to increase my estrogen, and especially in menopausal women. And I'm like, none of them do. None herb. Poor grammar, but none herb raises your estrogen. It's not how it works anymore. And so, but herbs do absolutely help mitigate symptoms. They absolutely, mm-hmm. some of them, the phytoestrogens. So those plants that act like estrogens combined with the receptor and very, very, very mildly turn them on, could help relieve symptoms. Relieving symptoms doesn't mean it's protecting your bone. It doesn't mean it's protecting your brain. It doesn't mean it's working with your heart or your skin, but hot flashes, night sweats, like those things, it could be very beneficial for. And I think that's what trips, yeah. I know it's what trips women up. It's confusing. You hear phytoestrogen and mm-hmm. you think, oh, it's an estrogen. So therefore it's same. I'm like, no, if the most potent estrogen in your body is E2, it's called estradiol. So if that's 100, if that's like it, 100, then these phytoestrogens are like a 2, a 4, maybe a 6, you know, on a scale. Mm-hmm. And so it's not same. Helpful, but it's not going to turn you back into that right. of a 32-year-old again, I'm sorry to say.
Right, yeah.
It's not fair. Yeah. I mean, it's for sure not fair or fun for yeah. women as they get older, but
not fun yeah. at all.
This is where the whole, like, we need that next course, the next manual, you know? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Once you hit 35, here's your new manual.
Put it on the calendar.
Oh, I'm ready for that next manual.
Yeah. So we talked about bringing estrogen into the body. I would love to talk about estrogen detoxification. This is one of the coolest things that I've learned from you, that it's really complex and we have 3 different phases, mm-hmm. maybe more. I really love your bathtub analogy, like the sewer drain analogy. Can yeah. you kind of simplify the phases and what's, I guess, important to each?
So everything in your whole body, obviously everything, has to get detoxified. And your detoxification system works every day, 24/7, 365. It doesn't take Christmas off. It doesn't take Sunday off. It doesn't take your birthday off, right? Like, it's always working. Yeah. And when you detoxify something, you have to, you can't just, like, let me give you an example. Like, you can't just, if you get a plastic in your body, for example, just plastic in, then like plastic out. What the body does is it has to break it down into other compounds that can be then safely excreted out the other end. It's the same for your hormones. It's not estrogen in, estrogen out. It's estrogen in or created. And then you break it down and then you break it down again, and then you can excrete it. And so it's a multi-step process. And that's why we call it phase 1, phase 2, and phase 3, because it's this multi-step process. So my analogy is the bathtub analogy. When we go through phase 1, I call that the water coming into your bathtub. So our water can never be turned off, but we can adjust it. And we have 3 different kinds of water that come through, and they're numbered. There's a 2 kind of water. There's a 4, and there's a 16. And these are pathways your estrogens go down, 2, 4, 16. So now you have water in your bathtub. You need to drain it, which is the drain, which is phase 2. So is your drain open? Is your drain closed? Is your drain clogged full of hair? Like, I figured out mine was this morning. Like, what's going on with the drain in your bathtub, right? And then now that you're through your drain, where does it go? Well, it goes out your sewer line and it gets carried away. And that's like through your kidneys, and you urinate it out, or through your intestines and you poop it out. And so that's your phase 1, 2, 3 when it comes to your estrogens. Now, I get asked a lot, okay, what do I do for each phase? I'm like, well, just like in your house, you would always start with your sewer line, because if you've got a cracked sewer line, a broken sewer line, a clogged sewer line, you can adjust that drain and that water all you want. It doesn't matter. You're still going to overflow because your sewer line is, you know, grossed and clogged and what have you. So it comes with hydration, and it's with affecting your intestines. So do you have a history of antibiotic use? You know, alcohol affects our gut microbiome. Do you have critters in there? Parasites, you know, candida, what fiber? Do you have enough fiber? Do you go to the bathroom every day? Like, what's going on with your intestinal health? And so we look there first, get it out. And then we back up to the drain. Because again, if the drain is closed, I can't turn the water off. Like, who cares what the water's doing? I got to open the drain. So now we open the drain. So the drain is managed by an enzyme known as it's an abbreviation called COMT, right? COMT. And COMT loves magnesium. So now for women, I'm like, hey, now is the time to get your magnesium game going because it's the cofactor for this enzyme. Zinc can be used as a backup. And so what's going on with your mineral status, first and foremost, but magnesium is a big one. Do you take Epsom salt baths? Okay, maybe now's the time. Are you taking magnesium? Maybe we need to look at your magnesium and mineral intake. And then we go up to the water now. And as I said before, the water has three different pathways, the 2, the 4, and the 16 pathway. Sort of the preferred, less cancerous pathway is the 2 pathway. That's the pathway we like. And that pathway is really driven by the broccoli, kale, cauliflower family. And so do you eat those foods? Do you eat them regularly every day? Because they can be really helpful. Also things like resveratrol, we hear of the supplement resveratrol, quercetin, which is in apples and onions, can be also helpful for that pathway. There's a popular supplement called DIM, diindolmethane, DIM, which is in the broccoli, it's in the kale, it's in the cauliflower. DIM also helps modulate that pathway. But as you know, everyone jumps on the DIM bandwagon and like people give it out like Oprah gives out free cars. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
You got to start with the sewer line and then the drain and then we move up. And what happens is women will jump on DIM and they're like, oh, I feel amazing. It works so well. And then they doesn't and they don't. And things start to like, they feel toxic. They feel worse. They're like their symptoms come back. I've had so many women write me and go, yeah, I did that. I jumped on DIM, felt great for 2 months. And then I completely screwed myself up. I'm like, yeah, because you didn't affect the drain or the sewer line and you got backup. It's also important to know that these pathways I'm talking about in the context of estrogen, they're the pathways for everything in your body. So everyone wants to focus on estrogen. And I'm like, you know, when you take DIM, you affect other things like polyaromatic hydrocarbons, which are toxic. Like you are going to affect other chemicals, other drugs, other hormones in your body when you affect these pathways. So be very, very mindful when you're trying to shift your drain, that enzyme I said earlier, COMT, also breaks down dopamine. It also breaks down epinephrine and norepinephrine. So if you're trying to, quote, speed it up for your estrogen, you're going to speed it up for your dopamine, your epinephrine, your norepinephrine. And is that what you really want? So you've just got to be mindful that nothing in your body works as in a silo. Nothing's individual. Nothing's on its own independent path. Everybody's on the path often. You gotta be careful.
Yeah. With the three different pathways, I mean, we could see that one is really low, like if 2OH is low and 16OH is high and you go to stimulate the 2OH, but then you really want a balance of all three, right? Like they all could be really dangerous. They all could also be too low. Do you see that often that the dial is just like reverse and it's like, ooh.
Yeah. Especially that. So the 16 pathway is actually the big main pathway. I mean, it's like a 12-lane superhighway in your body. It detoxifies. It's the first step in detoxification for most of your hormones, medications, and things you come in contact with, your toxins. And so I will often get emails or messages or what have you from people who go, oh my goodness, my 16 is high. I need to slow it down. I'm like, do you? Are you sure? Be very mindful of what you're doing. I don't know because it's, you know, it's your patient, but at the same time, if you slow it down, you're going to slow down its processing of everything, not just estrogen. Same when it's slow, when it's really, really slow and people are like, oh, I need to speed it up. It's way too slow. I'm like, just be mindful that the drain is open because it's literally processing everything, like 70 to 80% of everything. So if you speed it up and your drain is clogged, you're going to hurt her. Because everything is going to get backed up and you're going to have a bathtub that overflows, not just with estrogen, but toxins and chemicals and xenobiotics and all this medications. So you have to be very careful. And then those women who are on medication or they're on like the birth control pill, if you go and speed up her detox to quote detoxify her, you're going to speed up the rate at which the medication is through her system. So if she's on the birth control pill and you've effectively just sped up or enhanced, I should say, her liver processing, you could effectively render her birth control not effective. So I've had lots of women go through these 7-day, 14-day detoxes and then they get pregnant. They didn't want to get pregnant, but the birth control pill got pushed through the factory down the conveyor belt faster. Wow. And it loses its effectiveness. And she's like, I get breakthrough bleeding. I started ovulating. I got pregnant. I'm like, yeah, because you clean swept everything. So crazy. And it goes the same with like antibiotics. It goes the same with blood pressure medication. Like it doesn't really matter what you're taking. If you're on these quote cleanses to speed things up or enhance what you do, just be mindful, because if you really need that medication for life, if it's really important for whatever reason, you'll render it less effective. And now you could be at risk. So just be careful.
That's really good to know. I was not aware of that. I mean, you know, we hear about certain medications, like you can't have grapefruit, right? Grapefruit juice, but like, we're not really hearing it about other things. So
yeah,
that's really good to know.
Yeah. Any of those. Yeah. I hear it's funny. I've had a lot of women through the years who've bought or been on or gone through where their yoga studio is doing a 14-day cleanse. And, and then they're like, so I'm pregnant. I'm like, uh-huh. Oh my God. And on the pill, like they were really trying not to become pregnant. And I'm like, well, you pushed the birth control pill faster. Its effectiveness went down and you ovulated. And when the sperm met the egg, surprise.
Voila. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
That's nuts.
So the detox worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Success.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we're also seeing the other extreme, like infertility is skyrocketing. Do you think a lot of that is from the toxins coming in?
I would say yes, all the above when it comes to fertility. Yeah. We know from men 100%. There's so much research on sperm. And I mean, even that study that came out, earlier this year about how penises are shrinking and sperm counts are going way down. And it's from toxins, you know, it's not just because like evolution's happening, you know, it's definitely from toxins. And so we know men's testosterone now is lower than it was 20 years ago, 50 years ago. So if you took a 50-year-old man 50 years ago and ran his testosterone, and then you took a 50-year-old man now in 2021, it's different. The 50-year-old man from 50 years ago is much higher. So now with these ranges, labs have to adjust their ranges for the current population of what's normal. So a lot of times at Dutch, I'm telling practitioners, just because it's an age range doesn't mean it's optimal range. Just because, and I know we're talking about men, but it applies to women too. For some of these age ranges, like DHEA and testosterone for women, you may be in the age range of somebody who's 50 because you are 50, but you may feel better in the age range of somebody who's 30 because it's really where you should be if you were 50 years ago. And so we see this over and over when it comes to fertility. But I also think with fertility on the female side, you know, our brain is a female is constantly scanning our environment. Are we safe enough and healthy enough to have a baby, whether you want a baby or not? Like, I don't want a baby at all, but my brain is constantly scanning for that. And so if your body doesn't feel safe or there's a lot going on, it will divert. And so you may not ovulate that month. You may struggle to become pregnant because the body and the brain is just like, oh, the brain's like, let's protect you. This isn't cool. So not only do you have all these endocrine disrupting hormones in our system, we have all sorts of autoimmune that can affect it. We have all sorts of other endocrine issues, like thyroid is an example that can affect it. Then add the stress of the pandemic in 2020. Now, obviously there were a lot of babies that were created because people were like, well, what else am I going to do? I work from home. How great is this?
Right.
Where a lot of other women were really, really struggling. A lot of women were writing me and on social media going, is anyone else's period really weird? Like, did anyone else hit June, July, August of 2020 and their hair was falling out? Period got weird. I'm like, yes. Yeah. Cause it's like, it was constant fear, constant stress. And the brain was like,
not a good time.
And it's individual. It's definitely not population. It's definitely individual, because clearly there are women who are going to go, oh, but my neighbor got pregnant and I can't. It's just so individual with that.
Yeah.
What's your resilience and what are you already dealing with?
Exactly. How full is your bucket? And was 2020 just the last drop that made it overflow? And now you're really struggling.
Yeah. Where does sex hormone binding globulin come into that? Do we see that elevated when women are really stressed?
I don't see it with stress. I see it a lot with estrogen. So especially women on the birth control pill. So that high excessive estrogen will increase all the binding globulins. So sex hormone binding globulin, thyroid binding globulin, cortisol binding globulin. And so it'll go way up to counter it, to be like, oh, I can bind this up. I'll mop this up and fix the problem. Hmm. Now, what's hard is that when we hear this a lot, women go on the birth control pill to prevent pregnancy, but then in some cases, because that binding globulin goes up, it binds up her testosterone as well. And now her libido goes down because she's like on the pill to prevent pregnancy, but it's not in the mood because the byproduct is you lose testosterone. And so we see it all the time at Dutch. I saw it all the time in practice of women will go on the pill for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. And then once their testosterone is down, once their sex hormone binding globulin is up, it's kind of permanent. Literature says it's kind of permanent, and it's real.
Oh, wow.
Real tough to get it back down again. So I've had a lot of women post pill go, I still can't get a libido back. My testosterone is still kind of permanently low. And I'm like, honey, I know. It's a crap side effect that nobody taught you when you were 18 and went on the pill, and 10 years later or 15 years later, when you went off to try to have a baby, nobody told you it's probably not going to rebound like you had hoped. Cause everyone's just worried about don't get me pregnant or regulate my periods. Nobody, nobody was really warning an 18-year-old or 16-year-old or 20-year-old about their testosterone.
That's another manual that's needed.
Ooh, it's a whole other manual. I know. It's a whole other manual. But although there's Beyond the Pill by Dr. Jolene Brighton. That's a pretty good manual for them.
Yeah, that's great. I love that book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I was somehow like, Renee and I got like a point.
I know.
Somehow we got like a little side memo. Luckily, both of us went off of the pill very quickly. We're not on a very, and I don't even remember what it was, what the big red flag was, but I'm just like, thank God. I didn't go for me.
I was a monster on it. I was on it for 2 months and I was dating my now husband of 10 years. I was dating him at the time and I was just like getting annoyed by him. I was like trying to break up with him for 2 months. And he was like, it might be the birth control you're taking. I got off of it and like, I've been fine ever since. So
fair enough.
Good job, Ryan.
And he's smart. He knew. Yeah.
That one.
So that was enough for me to just get off of it and then get more into like natural family planning and tracking my cycle that like instigated that path for me. And I'm super grateful for it.
It's definitely not fair because I get asked a lot like, well, what would you tell your teenage daughter? You know, like, oh, do you not believe in the birth control pill? Like, I believe in the birth control pill. I mean, sometimes it's the option. Like, it is what it is, but what I don't believe in not informing women of kind of a lot about the birth control pill. So I wish that there was a lot more check-in. I wish there was a lot more like, hey, you know, even as an 18-year-old, I know 18-year-olds are embarrassed and they're like, they don't want to hear it, but like, hey, look, we're going to check in about this every year. And I'm going to run you through these questions about your mood and your gut and your weight and your skin, like all these things, because the birth control pill can affect those things. Obviously other things can too, but I just kind of want to know, like, if your headache's gotten worse, you know, like, is your mood gone down? Are you feeling more depressed? Like, how's your libido? Like all these things, because if the birth control pill is, you know, if they decide it's the right thing for them, it's my job as the practitioner to make sure that they're going to be okay. And don't get 5 years down the road, 6 years down the road, 8 years down the road, and have been developing the side effects and everyone's blowing it off. Like, oh, I'm getting more depressed. Oh, here's his SSRI, right? Here's his antidepressant. Like, oh, I'm having a lot of gut issues. I feel, oh, it's IBS. Like, here's an IBS medication. It's like, well, hold on.
Add another med.
Right. Like, it's possible it could be the birth control. And let's work with that. Let's see what we can do.
Right.
And so I'm not against the pill. I know a lot of people are very, anti-pill because they're like, oh, it's an endocrine disruptor. Yeah, it is totally. Yeah. But we don't have a lot of great options. And when it comes to preventing pregnancy.
Yeah. I know Dr. Brighton says that too. Like, it was made for a reason, but at the very least we should be educating young women about diet and gut health.
Yeah. Or even just there's now a company and I forget its name, but they're it's a very cute, clever name too, but it's created by pharmacists. And they give you the nutrients you're missing from the medications that you're taking. So if you're on the birth control pill, they have a supplement that has all the things that the birth control pill is going to render low from a nutrient standpoint, like the B vitamins, probiotics, what have you. And I was like, oh, that's brilliant, because as functional practitioners, right, the three of us are educating about this, but in maybe more conventional land, they are not, or they're leaving it up to the pharmacist who is really busy and has a lot going on and doesn't have time to educate them about B12 or B6 or what have you, and the birth control pill. So I'm hoping that this company takes off, or that like more pharmacy education, more conventional education of, hey, you know what, you're on the birth control pill and it depletes B vitamins and it, you know, like maybe you should take a probiotic. Right. And it, just general, like obviously functional medicine approaches it a little more personalized, but even just generally across the land, if women on the pill knew like, oh, it depletes a lot of nutrients that I probably need and is why I feel like crap. And sometimes on the pill, I should replete them with these nutrients.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be amazing to see with like all medications. Like,
yeah.
Okay. Here's a statin, but we're also going to give you B12 and CoQ10.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, just as a baseline to just cover some of those.
Yeah. I agree. Really cool. I totally agree. I think it definitely is very cool. You know, the new wave, even though we've been talking about it for years, right? As functional practitioners, finally, I think there's enough pushback from the general public of, hey, wait a minute, this is actually in the literature. Like, this is established in pharmacy law. You know, like these things get depleted. We know this in the big pill books, the big pill reference books. Why aren't we educating women to replete themselves?
Yeah. And to know your personal body. So something like methylation, I know you talk a lot about CMT. I know MTHFR has been popular for so long, but it sounds like COMT is the rising star.
Hopefully. Yep, for sure.
And so if you're not getting those cofactors, but actually, I'm just going to ask you for advice. What does genetics fit in for you? And how would you say to start that process of figuring out what nutrients you need?
So I am a big fan of genetic testing if it fits in your budget, but I am not a big fan of genetic testing. It's kind of first line defense if it doesn't fit in your budget, because if you get your genetics tested, let's say that's all that fits in your budget, you get your genetics tested and you find out your COMT, as an example, is slow. You have the slow variant. Now that means you process, your drain is slow, right? Your drain is slow to process estrogen. Your drain is slow to process dopamine. Your drain is slow to process epinephrine, norepinephrine. In theory, we don't actually know how slow your drain is, which is why I like the Dutch test to show what's happening in real time. So the genetics tells me what potentially could go wrong. And then I like to know what's happening in real time, because I have lots of people who have completely normal estrogens, completely normal dopamine, epinephrine, norepinephrine. And they'll go, well, that's weird because my COMT is slow. I'm like, but the body's smart. It's possible your body's figured it out, or it's not as slow as you think, or slow is relative, or you're taking other nutrients and supplements to, quote, speed it up. And so it's not really a problem for you. And so if you just looked at the genetics, then you would be assuming things are fast or slow or normal that may not be. On the flip side, your COMT on genetics may be completely normal. So the normal variant's actually a little bit fast, believe it or not. So you may look at that and go, I have no problems detoxing estrogen because my test result says it's normal. But things like quercetin and things like a lot of green tea and things like estrogen will slow the COMT down on its own. So then you get real-time testing, and real-time testing shows your drain is clogged. And you're like, what the heck? But my genetic test says it's normal. But you're taking quercetin every day because it's allergy season and you're really tired. So you're drinking 3 or 4 cups of green tea and, you know, maybe you're on the birth control pill or women on HRT or like there's other, and it's slowing it down. So
yeah,
that's why I love genetic testing. I love to pair the two together. But if budget is the issue, I don't start with genetic because I want real-time testing. And then I can add in genetic later when I'm trying to really work through the rest of the puzzle pieces that are stumping us.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I've been doing Dr. Ben Lynch's strategy training.
I just got mine back. I'm so excited.
Oh, amazing. I know. I still need to do mine now that I finished the 14-week training, but it really is so complicated, like learning what speeds up the different pathways and slows down the pathways. It's like, oh my gosh. But
yeah, so I have his chart. Well, I have his book right there. It's the green book.
Oh, yes. You have a nice bookshelf. I'm
like,
there.
Right there. It's all like color coded. And then his big pathway planner. So Ben, Dr. Lynch used to have his Seeking Health conferences for years. And then he stopped those to flip to focus on supplements and the testing. He was like priorities. And so at these conferences, we used to get these huge pathway planners. And so it was this great visual of all the things that turn things on and turn things off. And when it came to variants, and man, they were so, so helpful. So I hope once we're allowed to like really do conferences again, I hope he does conferences so we can get updates on these planners.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That'd be awesome.
So Dr. Carey, we have like 52 more questions for you, but we want to be mindful of your time.
Right. Sorry.
So we're going to close this out. We would love to ask you for one piece of advice. If you could give our audience a piece of advice that they could start doing today. Right. Yes. Now.
I am all about free, cheap, and easy. And so we've touched on it with the cortisol awakening response, but it's to use light and dark to your advantage because you can. So in our brain, we have clock genes. The clock genes are literally like the clock on your wall. They set the rhythm for everything in your body, whether it's your reproductive rhythm, whether it's your when you're hungry rhythm, how you go to sleep rhythm, how you get up in the morning rhythm. All these rhythms get set by these clock genes. And then every single gland in your body has mini clocks or baby clocks that get set by things, but they kind of answer to the clock and the mama clock in the brain. Well, the mama clock in the brain, the main clock gene, it sets and resets by lightness and darkness. Now, and I say this a lot, like notice I didn't say ashwagandha, notice I didn't say yoga, and notice I didn't say intermittent fasting. While all those things are amazing, and I believe in all of them, they are not the main setters and resetters. Light and dark is. And so give the clock gene what it wants, which is lightness and darkness. So in the morning, get full spectrum light, open your window, go outside, spend 5, 10, 15 minutes in natural light. Don't stare at the sun and burn out your eyes, please. Be smart. But like getting that natural light helps set the clock. And then at night, you do the complete opposite. You wind down, you wear blue light blocking glasses, you dim your lights, you be careful of your screen time, and you sleep in complete darkness. Make sure there's no night lights and blinky lights and, you know, alert lights, or wear an eye mask so that you don't have to see any of that stuff. And what that does is that helps set and reset how your clock works, which then helps reset your reproductive hormones. It helps with hunger. It helps with blood sugar and insulin release. It helps with everything else that works on a clock in your body. It helps. Like, is it magic? For some people, yeah. But for a lot of people, it just helps. And it's free, cheap, and easy. So light and dark. Now, for those of you who go, well, I live in an environment where it's, or I get up really early and the sun's not out, you can buy it. You can fake it. So on Amazon, buy the $20, $30 full spectrum light box. It's usually 10,000 lux, and turn it on in the morning, and you have it on your counter while you're getting ready, making coffee, putting on your makeup, whatever it is. And having that full spectrum light box that mimics the sun can be quite healthy. And I get asked a lot, do I have a preferred company? Or I don't. And the reason I don't, because they come in different shapes and sizes. And some of them are like more portable than others. And some of them, like, you can clip onto your computer. So my best friend has one that like hangs over her computer. So when she starts work in the morning, she turns it on. And so I don't know what you know, everybody's preferences are different. And so,
yeah,
just make sure it says full spectrum, read the reviews, you know, and then fits in your budget, and then use that if it's dark in the morning. So that's what I do.
That's a great hack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love free, cheap, and easy too.
Free, cheap, and easy. Right. I'm all about fit. And that's the great thing about, I mean, a lot of health is expensive, a lot, but a lot of our basics that get overlooked because people are like, oh, it's not sexy. I'm like, but they're free, cheap, and easy. So
yeah, that sounds why first? Not? What's the problem?
Yeah.
Great advice. Sorry. Wonderful. Well, we will send people to your website and then also Instagram. Your Instagram page is awesome. We love your posts all the time. So if you're not already following Dr. Carey, definitely check out the show notes. We'll link to that. Anywhere else people should be following you?
Instagram's definitely where I hang out. I'm definitely very visual, all education. Great. So at dr.careyjones.
Awesome.
Awesome. We're so grateful. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. This is awesome. We learned so much, and we can't wait for our audience to love it too.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thanks.
Yes. And thank you to everyone at home for tuning in today. We'll see you next time.
Love this episode of the Biohacker Babes podcast? Head over to Apple Podcasts to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. We truly appreciate your support.
Until then, happy biohacking.
This podcast offers health, fitness, and nutritional information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitute for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional.